Welcome to Luma Digest. I'm Noura. Right, so this morning we're starting with a story that's been all over tech news. And honestly, it's one of those where the headline tells you one thing, but the implications tell you something else entirely. Snap, the company behind Snapchat, just announced they're cutting 1,000 jobs, that's 16% of their workforce. Gone. Now. On the surface. That's brutal. 1,000 people losing their jobs is never just a number. But here's where it gets complicated. The CEO, Evan Spiegel, is framing this as an AI efficiency play. He's saying that more than 65% of Snap's new code is now generated by AI, and their AI agents are handling over 1 million support questions every month. Think about that for a second. They're not saying AI replaced these roles directly, but they are saying AI is doing enough of the work that they need fewer people to do the rest. The company expects to save $500 million by mid-year. The stock went up nearly 8% when they announced this. So investors are happy, but if you're a developer or a support engineer watching this, you're probably asking yourself the same question I am. If AI can generate 65% of the code and handle 1 million support queries, what does that mean for the teams still there? And what does it mean for hiring across the industry? Snap's calling this a crucible moment. Caught between tech giants and nimble startups, the activist investors are pushing for efficiency. And AI gave them a way to deliver it. I don't have a tidy answer here. But it feels like we're watching something shift in real time. The question isn't whether AI makes companies more efficient anymore. It's what happens to the people when it does. Worth thinking about. Okay, so, completely different corner of the tech world now. But stay with me because this next one is properly useful. There's a piece out this morning from a developer named Oran, and it's about something most of us get wrong for years before we finally figure it out. Permissions? You know the drill, you're building an app, users have roles. Some people can edit things, some can only view, some can approve. And before you know it, your codebase is full of IF statements checking roles in 20 different places, and then the business changes the rules, and you're hunting through files trying to remember where you hard-coded warehouse underscore lead 6 months ago. Oran sat with warehouse teams, finance teams, production teams, not writing code, just watching and listening for 2 weeks, and he realized something brilliant. The permission problems across all these different departments, they were the same problem. Who can do what, and who approved it? His solution wasn't a fancy framework. It was 5 database tables, role-based access control, RBAC, permissions stored as data, not scattered through your logic. You don't hard-code roles. You define relationships in the database. Users belong to roles. Roles have permissions. And when someone tries to do something, you run one SQL query that answers the question, does this user have this permission? Here's why that matters. When permissions live in your database instead of your code, they survive framework migrations, they survive rewrites, they survive staff turnover. Someone new joins the team. They can look at the tables and understand the entire permission model without reading thousands of lines of logic. And when the business says, actually, we need a new approval layer, you add rows to a table, you don't refactor half your application. This is one of those patterns that feels obvious once you've seen it. But most of us learn it the hard way after years of painful permission bugs. If you're building anything with user roles right now, read Oran's piece. It's in the show notes. Genuinely worth your time. Right. Let's talk about something that sounds academic, but actually has pretty immediate implications. There's new research out about why large language models behave unpredictably sometimes, and the answer is chaos. Literal, mathematical chaos. The study shows that LLMs have 3 different regimes: stable, where small errors in the input get smoothed out and disappear; chaotic, where tiny rounding errors in floating point calculations compound and eventually dominate the output; and signal dominated, where the input is strong enough that noise doesn't matter. The problem is, we're building agentic systems on top of these models, systems that make decisions, chain multiple calls together, run for extended periods. And if your model is operating in the chaotic regime, tiny perturbations early in the chain can completely derail the output later. This isn't theoretical. It's why you sometimes get wildly different responses to the same prompt. It's why agent workflows fail in ways that are hard to reproduce. The model isn't broken. It's just operating in a state where numerical instability matters. So what do you do about it? Honestly, the research doesn't have a silver bullet yet, but it does suggest that understanding which regime your model is operating in and designing systems that account for that instability is going to matter more as we build more complex workflows. If you're running agents in production, this is one to keep an eye on. Because the more we rely on these systems to make consequential decisions, the more we need to understand when and why they go sideways. Okay, I need to talk about this next one because it's brilliant. Quantum computing gets a lot of hype. But this story isn't about quantum computers, it's about a classical algorithm, inspired by quantum mechanics, that just solved a problem nobody thought was tractable. Researchers simulated a quasicrystal structure with 268 million sites. That's an absurdly large system. And they did it orders of magnitude faster than traditional approaches. Here's the thing, they didn't use a quantum computer, they used quantum principles, the maths, the thinking, to design a better classical algorithm, and it worked. This is the bit that really matters. We talk a lot about what quantum computers will do someday. But quantum-inspired classical algorithms are delivering results now. For material science, for drug discovery, for anywhere you need to simulate complex systems, this approach is already accelerating research. And it's a good reminder that the value of quantum mechanics isn't just in building quantum hardware, it's in the way it changes how we think about problems. Sometimes, the inspiration is enough. Last one for today. And it's a production war story. There's a detailed incident report out about a Kubernetes cluster on AWS where everything looked fine. Pods were running, health checks were passing, but the application was unreachable. The ingress address field just stayed empty. The root cause? 3 separate issues. Webhook failures. Missing subnet tags. ACM certificate problems. Any one of those on its own might have been fine, but together, they created a silent failure that took hours to diagnose. The reason I'm highlighting this, it's not because the solution is exotic, it's because the write-up is phenomenal. The author walks through the entire debugging process, what they checked, what the logs said, what the AWS console showed, and they end with a checklist you can use to prevent the same failure in your own setup. If you run Kubernetes on AWS, bookmark this one. It's the kind of post-mortem that saves you hours the next time something breaks in a way that doesn't make sense. So, stepping back from all of that, here's what I keep coming back to. Snap is betting on AI efficiency and cutting jobs. Developers are rediscovering that good data models outlast clever code. Language models have chaos hiding in their maths. Quantum-inspired algorithms are solving real problems today, and production systems fail in ways that look fine until they don't. The thread running through all of this? The gap between what looks like it's working and what's actually robust. Something to think about on the commute home. Thanks for listening. Links in the show notes.